You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Kia ora, everybody. Hi, I'm here joined by Andy Neal, the author of a new Beatles book about the Australasian tour the Beatles went on in 1964. It's called When We Was Fab. Andy, where were you when the Beatles came to Oceania?
I was merely a twinkle in my father's eye. I wasn't born until 1965.
Oh, true. One year off.
Yeah, I was born in November 65. So, yeah, I wish I was born March so I could say I was conceived, possibly with a Beatle lineage. But unfortunately, no, I was yet to be emerged into the world. But I was born into a Beatle.
You say a Beatle household?
Yes.
Oh,
the youngest of four siblings. And the eldest sibling was of the right age to be completely swept away by Beatlemania. So when he left home to go to college, I inherited all of his Beatle records and Beatle photos and all that stuff that he'd had lying around the house. And that's how I got into it, because I was too young to buy records of my own. So I sort of got into the Beatles by osmosis, really.
Yeah, I'm the youngest of four brothers, and I also, you do just absorb certain cultural tastes and stuff, which is really cool.
That's right. I mean, it's an advantage in a way, because your taste is almost given to you.
Exactly.
You know, when you've got older siblings, and if they've got great taste, then you end up with it too.
Was this the only Australasian tour that the Beatles embarked on?
Yes, it turned out to be the only one. There was talk of them coming back the following year, and you know, there was rumours that it was being negotiated. But the Beatles' career, you know, as we know, was so busy, and just the promoter, actually, both Ken Brodziak, who was the promoter in Australia, and Kerry Jodian here in New Zealand, had a two-year exclusivity deal with Brian Epstein that if they decided to come back, they would have first refusal. But it just wasn't to be, because A, the Beatles were busy, but also B, they were getting disillusioned with Beatlemania, how Beatlemania was being conducted, you know, with the screaming fans, and, you know, people couldn't hear them, and they were just fed up with that whole thing. So, of course, they came off the road and went into that second phase, you know, with Sgt. Pepper and the White Album and Abbey Road. You know, it was the next phase.
Touching on Beatlemania, in a previous interview, you mentioned how Victorian and conservative and kind of fuddy-duddy Australia was, which is a large reason as to why Beatlemania was so big, both here and in Australia. Why do you think Oceania in general, was so kind of behind the times when it came to pop culture in particular and music and rock and roll?
I think it was the tyranny of distance, really. It was Australia and New Zealand were British colonies at the bottom of the world, and, you know, we take for granted now that whatever's happening overseas, we get to hear about it because we live in a global village and we've got instant communications. In those days, you know, we relied upon newspapers and, you know, people writing letters, receiving letters from relations back in Britain, you know, telling us what was going on. And you've got to remember too, television only started in New Zealand in 1960. Communications were slow, basically. But having said that, you know, all the recording artists, rock and roll recording artists that had happened since the mid-50s, all these records were coming out here, albeit, you know, months late. So people were aware of Elvis Presley and Gene Vincent and Buddy Holly and Little Richard and Chuck Berry, but of course they weren't seeing them because it was, you know, financially and logistically a bit of a stretch to bring them all the way out here. We'd had pop tours through, funny enough, Kerry Jodian, who were the Beatles promoters, brought out Cliff Richard and the Shadows, for example, the Everly Brothers, Roy Orbison, Helen Shapiro, all those pre-Beatles sort of artists. But the Beatles tour of 60 years ago was the first big cultural moment where an overseas artist came and really shook things up.
You and the co-author have interviewed around 100 people for this new book, including support acts for the Beatles. I'm wondering, who were some of these acts in New Zealand, and what was their reception like when they were on stage? Did they get some love, or were they like, boom, we want to see the Beatles?
The tour was planned from Australia, and the support acts that were booked on the tour were predominantly Australian, and Kerry Jodian in New Zealand seemed to think that they didn't need a local cast. They just took what had been planned in Australia. There were two local support acts, two local singers, both called Johnny. One, of course, was Johnny Devlin, a New Zealand boy from Whanganui who had been massive in New Zealand in the late 50s. He did a nationwide tour of both islands. These shows would end in riots. You know, he literally being torn limb from limb. I mean, a lot of it was stage managed very cleverly. He was booked onto the tour after he'd moved to Australia. It's funny, there's a letter which we put in the book. When the Australian promoters were writing to Kerridge Odeon about, you know, well, this is who we've got for the show, Robert Kerridge said, "Johnny Devlin, you sure?" He just had a memory of all these riots, and he thought he was a bit of a gimmick. He said, "Are you sure he's good enough for the Beatles tour?" You know, Johnny Devlin was very shrewd. When he was offered the tour, he asked for twice the amount of money that was being offered, which he got. Plus, he insisted on being the first act on because, relating to what you were saying, he thought that he'd go on stage and he'd be fighting against the tide of screaming girls saying, "Get off, we want the Beatles," you know. So he was first, and then there was another local act called Johnny Chester, another Johnny. He was from Australia, and he'd been booked by the local promoters again just to fill out the bill at the start. That's curious with both Johnny Devlin and Johnny Chester. They were like Elvis imitators that we know we see everywhere now. They were doing things like Blue Suede Shoes and Jailhouse Rock and all these sort of things that were like out of date in 1964. They were at least like 5 or 6 years out of date. So it was almost like this weird culture shock of the acts that supported the Beatles. But the crazy thing is that the whole show lasted approximately 90 minutes. We take for granted now that if you don't see a headlining act, say Taylor Swift or Ed Sheeran or whoever it may be, play for at least an hour, then you feel like you've been ripped off or shortchanged. The Beatles only play for 27 minutes. You know, they occupied that last half hour of the show. And so, you know, but people went away happy. You know, and that's how things were done in those days. You played two shows a night, a 6 o'clock and an 8 o'clock. You had all these support acts, and then the headliner came on for the last half hour.
Throughout the book, there's a lot of new photographs and materials related to this Australasian tour. Is there any new material about the Beatles' visit to Ōtepoti, Dunedin?
Unfortunately, the South Island wasn't covered as well as the Wellington and Auckland and the North Island. We found some great photos of the Beatles on stage at the Dunedin Town Hall, which is still standing. We also found some interesting photos of when they arrived at the City Hotel. It was on the main street, either Moray Street or Rattray Street, I'm not quite sure. And of course, that's long since gone. But they had a hell of a time getting into that hotel, which is documented in detail in the book, because the Dunedin authorities had no idea how many people were going to show up to see them. And it wasn't just kids, it was a lot of curious bystanders, you know, who just got drawn along. So when the Beatles' car turned up at the front entrance of the hotel, the police cleared a passageway, like a tunnel, for the Beatles to run from the car into the entrance of the hotel, but it was only about 5 inches wide. So as soon as the first Beatle got out of the car and made a beeline for the front door, the crowd just converged, and the other Beatles were caught literally in the mob, and poor old John Lennon got a big clump of his hair removed. Because there's actually film of that in the New Zealand archives, the NZBC or Television New Zealand archives. You see him go down like in a scrum. John Lennon was actually picked up and thrown into the hotel, and he was so shaken up by it and so angry that he actually went on strike. He didn't appear at the Dunedin press conference, so there was only three Beatles at that.
Lastly, while I have you this afternoon, do we know what their favourite performance was, the favourite place they went to play? Did they have a favourite?
You've got to remember that the Beatles were living life at such a frantic pace. Their career, you know, when you look back on an almanac or a chronology of the Beatles' career, you see how much they packed into the 8 years they were in the public eye. It's incredible. So I don't think they ever commented that they had a particular place that they played. Certainly, I think this is probably not good for New Zealand, but in Melbourne, they filmed one of the shows, which you can see on YouTube. And they actually had a sort of a primitive PA, like a foldback, because in those days you didn't have foldback speakers, and groups tended to rely on just the PA system wherever they played. Channel 9 in Australia had signed an exclusive deal for a lot of money to film the Beatles' performance, the last performance in Melbourne. And because the Beatles couldn't hear themselves and they couldn't hear themselves over the noise, these guys actually did a mic split. So when you watch that show on YouTube, it's actually pretty good, considering that, you know, there was no sound check, of course. Ringo's drums aren't mic'd up. The sound is is pretty advanced for the time. So I think if any sort of show can sum up that tour, that's the one. That's the best representation of the Beatles in Australasia on stage.
That was a Radio 1 91FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.